Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Holidays mean feasting. From cheddar biscuits to French toast bakes, Hero Bread has you covered with 0 to 5 grams net carb and high fiber options to ensure your holidays stay delicious and balanced. Like their 3 grams net carb pan au chocolat. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code FALL25 at checkout. That's FALL25 at HERO.CO. All figures are per serving of Hero Bread. Contains up to 17 grams of fat per serving. See the product nutrition panels on hero.co for more information.
Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host, and this week in Reykjavik, we had some blue skies. It's been a while, man. It's felt like the summer was passing us by a little bit, but in the last couple of days we've had some beautiful blue skies and some sun. It's been warm, it's been nice. We've had a bit of a scary COVID spike going on, but they're bringing in some new controls here, so hopefully that gets under control. And life is good. I've been playing a few games. I've got a really fun one to talk about as the main game of the episode, the featured game. It is a really interesting game that I didn't know about until it dropped and suddenly started getting these great reviews everywhere. It's by Acid Nerve, published by Devolver Digital. And it's the kind of charming fairy tale action adventure Death's Door. I've been playing that one and loving it. I'm looking forward to telling you about it today. I've also added a new game to my reviews list for the future. It's a really interesting one. I've been waiting for this one for a while. It's a PSVR game. And I now have the adapter so I can play that on my PS5. Hopefully the PSVR games run nicely. I haven't tried one out yet. But this one's by Trebuchet in Montreal. And it is a VR flora builder in which you master the ancient art of growing vegetation, grow a verdant forest, and uncover the secrets of otherworldly monuments. So I'm excited to try that one too. I love games where you grow things. I love the Spiritfarer style, growing plants and looking after them. Fuji was another PSVR game on that theme that I really enjoyed. This one's called Winds and Leaves. And I'll be talking about that one in a coming episode. I've also been playing a little bit more of Slay the Spire. And when I say a little bit, I mean playing it obsessively every day for at least 2 or 3 runs. I've gotten further. I've gotten all the way to the very, very final boss now. I've been there 3 times and had my ass handed to me every time. But I'm still loving it. I'm still playing it a lot. I'm still refining strategies, finding new ways to play, even now. Now that I'm kind of 68 hours, apparently, into Slay the Spire, and I'm still getting new ideas on how to play it, still learning how to play it, even at that late stage. There are so many strategies and different ways that you can play in that game. It's really wonderful. I didn't expect to love it the way that I love it, but I really do. Slay the Spire is amongst the best games I've played this year. I'm having a really great time with it. I have it on my phone, which has a nice big screen, So it's a game that I can just kind of kick back with and play around before bed or sitting on the sofa, not stacked up in front of the TV. But that's about it this week. Other than that, I've been settling into my new job. I had a little bit of time off before I started this job, and I didn't realise how much I had settled into having all of my time to myself and filling my time with cooking, cleaning, and kind of taking care of the house and just going out for coffee and just hanging out. And now that I'm back at work, I'm really enjoying the job, but it's amazing how 8 hours of a day just zips by when you're busy. And it feels like the day just flashed by, so I'm kind of reacclimatizing to this working life. And that's about it. I mean, we've still got the volcano going off not far from town, and last night it was throwing up lava so high into the air that we could even see it from the city. So people were out last night going down to the coast to look at the volcano, throwing this glowing molten rock up into the air miles away from the city, up in some kind of low mountains. And there was a huge plume of smoke going up. It's really spectacular. It's still going on. I still have to go and hike there this summer, before the summer is out. The nights are drawing in, and as I'm recording now, it's just past midnight. And it's actually dark outside. It's really nice to welcome back the night after these bright summer days that never seem to end. But before I talk about Death's Door, I will just mention that this show is Patreon-supported. So if you are enjoying it, if you enjoy the show, if you're a regular listener, or if it's your first time today and you like what you hear, you can go to patreon.com/gamingintheWild, where you can sign up for $1, $3, or $5 a month, for which you'll get sale recommendations, access to the show's Discord server to chat with me and other listeners and friends, and occasional extra episodes. I really need to get back on the extra episodes soon. I promise that they are coming for my patrons. So if you're interested in that, I really appreciate all of my patrons. You can go to patreon.com/gamingintheWild to sign up. And with that out of the way, let's move on and talk about the featured game of the episode, Death's Door. So Death's Door is the first game by Acid Nerve, a two-person studio based in Manchester in the UK. It came out just a couple of weeks ago, and it's published by Devolver Digital. It's on Windows, and it's a console exclusive on Xbox, which is a little weird because it's not on Game Pass, and there doesn't seem to be much reason for it to just be on Xbox. It could be on everything. It would be lovely on Switch. It would really suit that console. But for now, it's on Xbox only, and Windows. It's on Steam and places like that. It's been something of a critical darling since it came out, and it's been mentioned in the context of Indie Game of the Year, even now, in July. On Metacritic, it has 87 on Xbox and 86 on PC. Just good reviews all around, basically. Everyone's loving this game. On how long to beat, it takes 7.5 hours to complete the main story, 10 for extras, and 12.5 for completionists. So there is a good chunk, a good few hours extra for people that haven't had enough after the main story. I haven't yet beat the game. I'm in the final dungeon, though, so I've played, I think I must be 80% of the way through it. But I wanted to talk about the game today on the podcast and not be late for you, so I think I'll finish it over the weekend, probably. But I've seen enough of the game to understand it and to have my thoughts about it. I've been going back and backtracking and collecting secrets and stuff like that. I think I've probably played 7 hours already, going around the houses and going back and maybe doing some of those extras and completionist stuff just as a part of my playthrough, which is a good sign. It means that I'm really enjoying it if I'm not just sprinting for the finish line. And Devolver described the game as an action-adventure RPG. They say, reaping the souls of the dead and punching a clock might get monotonous, but it's honest work for a crow. The job gets lively when your assigned soul is stolen, and you must track down a desperate thief to a realm untouched by death, where creatures grow far past their expiry. Devolver have a certain way with words. I really like the way that they write about games. I think that any developer would be lucky to have that team working for them. They really do have a knack for having this kind of casual, fun style about everything they write. It's really good work. I describe the game as a charming and lovingly crafted isometric adventure with hack and slash combat, Zelda-like dungeons full of puzzles and bosses, a host of memorable characters, and a whole lot of heart. And so what is Death's Door? It is a game in which you play a fledgling crow who is having a very bad day in the office. The game begins when your crow hops off the bus and goes into work to a dreary monochrome office, which is kind of a bureaucracy of the afterlife. You come in through metal detector, through past a cafe, and up into the main office hall where there is a bunch of desks, a couple of crows tapping away on keyboards. But your job is that of a reaper. Young fledgling crows are sent out into the world, a little bit like the death of legend, to go and usher souls into the next realm. So you go to someone whose time has come, you collect their soul, and then you come back and turn it in at the office for all the paperwork to be done and the forms to be stamped. But you're sent out on this particular day to collect a giant soul. And it turns out that something is very strange about this case. You're tasked with going to get your soul, and within the first few minutes of the game, you go down to collect the soul. The soul is already being reaped, and this is kind of unheard of. And you see someone carrying the soul through a glowing door. And so you head back to the office and report what has happened. This apparently is very bad news, because reapers are immortal, except for the moments between being given a case and handing in the soul. And so for this time, you're immortal. Your clock is ticking. And so, of course, you have to go and collect that giant soul. But of course, it's not as easy as it sounds. It turns out that through that glowing door is a strange realm that has been sealed off from the doors of the reapers. The bureaucracy that you work in is this black and white monochrome office. And there are doors everywhere floating in the air. There are lampposts and lights and lifts, and the building seems to be kind of in a rift between worlds. There are parts of it that are floating, there are parts of it that are closed off. But reapers use a network of doors, and they use these doors to go and collect their souls. They open out into different areas, and the reapers pass through them. It's like an invisible travel network. And it turns out that this glowing door that your assigned soul has been spirited away into leads to a strange place that you didn't know about, that's kind of off the books. And there are several giant souls in this world, and so you're going to have to go and collect them all. They are overdue. They needed collecting anyway. You're not sure which one is yours, and so off you head to the different corners of this strange kingdom in search of your soul. And the different areas of this world are really, really thrilling to explore. You start off exploring a lost cemetery, which is really kind of washed out in colour, and it has these kind of zombies wandering around that you have to take care of, and bats and things like that. Then you'll end up in the overgrown ruins, another really vivid, lush area, and the flooded fortress. The whole thing has a wonderful feel to it that's reminiscent a little bit. And I'm going to talk about this game in relation to Death's Door a few times, but it is reminiscent of Hollow Knight. It's the idea of a civilization that for some reason isn't quite there, or there are just pockets of it dotted around, and you're kind of creeping through it, trying to piece together what happened here. But all of the different areas are really, really thrilling. And the basic gameplay is that you'll head towards a giant soul, after being given a few directions. You might find a little settlement or a few people that can kind of give you pointers about where it might be. You then have to kind of fight your way through a kind of a hostile area, doing some exploring, finding secrets, finding collectibles, before you arrive at a dungeon. And in each dungeon there is a boss, but they aren't just any old bosses, they are actually super fleshed out game characters that you'll talk to before having to face off against them. You collect your giant soul and off you go back to the office. There's a kind of a Metroidvania element to this as well. So as you're travelling around, you'll see that there are explodable walls that you can't explode. There are kind of high platforms where you're going to have to use a hookshot to get across. There are torches that need to be lit that will open doorways. And you don't have those abilities at the start, but as you're wandering, you'll see all kinds of these kind of breadcrumb trails leading off to secret areas. And it's actually really fun to get those abilities and then to come back and clean up all of the kind of the little secrets and the places that you couldn't get to earlier in the game. And by doing so, you'll gain some currency that you can use to upgrade yourself. And that will stand you in good stead for the challenges that lie ahead. So I actually had really good fun after I got the flame ability and the hookshot and all of these different things. Going back to the old areas and just doing rounds again, opening up some new rooms, finding new puzzles, finding interesting collectibles, mementos that tell you about this world, such as old photographs or personal effects of people in the game. You'll occasionally find a new weapon. There are only a handful, and they're actually a bit of an underdeveloped aspect of this game. They all feel pretty similar. You'll also find seeds that you can plant in specific green flower pots. They grow up into flowers, and when you eat a flower, you'll regain health. It's kind of a strange system. It feels a little odd at first, rather than just getting health drops from enemies, like you do in most games. But it works out. I mean, as I've played through, I figured out why they did it. It means that as you're backtracking through areas, you can get health at these kind of flower pots, but you can never use a potion if you're in trouble. So it actually kind of provides rhythm to the game, because you can only get health pickups at certain areas, at designated spots. So you have to collect those seeds and plant those flowers, and as you're doing that, you'll use those pots again and again. The flowers regenerate when you use doors, as do all of the enemies. So if you leave an area and come back, all of the enemies have respawned. You also get souls when you defeat baddies. You'll find sometimes soul clusters that are kind of a pink orb. And every time you get 400 or 600 or 800 souls, you can go back to the bureaucracy, back to your workplace, and trade them in at a desk for power-ups. The power-ups are hitting harder, chain dashing, so less cool-off between dashes, increasing your ranged attacks, like your magic and your bow and things like that. And there's one more, which I can't quite remember right now. But basically, there are five different tiers to each of those abilities. So you're kind of charging yourself up as you go, making yourself stronger. And the more time that you put into backtracking, the stronger you'll be and the less trouble you will have with the latest area that you've arrived at. And playing through this game, my favorite thing about it really has been the characters. They are so fun. It's so nicely put together. All of the characters have really good personalities and really nice dialogue. There is a Mother, the village chief, and all of the odd forest children. You'll meet Barb the Bard, who is like an amateur musician and an explorer who is searching this realm in search of inspiration for her music. And she's kind of reminiscent of Quirrell. If you've played Hollow Knight, this explorer who you'll find just wandering at the Hallow Nest as you go about your journey. You'll meet Pothead. He's a strange character whose head has been turned into a pot full of soup. You'll meet Jefferson, the suspicious chef, in the Stranded Sailor pub. And then there are the bosses themselves. I won't spoil them for you, but the first one's called Grandma. She's kind of an old witch, and she'll talk to you as you're kind of moving through a level. She'll just kind of appear and ask you what you're doing there. So you're kind of getting to know these bosses before you fight them, and piecing together their backstories. And they all have really sparkling dialogue, and it feels really kind of like a fairy tale, like a really nice gothic fairy tale. And then there are these beautiful little creatures called the forest spirits, and whenever you plant a seed in a flower pot, these little spirits pop up, and they're like little flower people who follow you around like lost sheep, just for a little while. This game's full of nice touches like that. So I would say there is some DNA in this game from Alice in Wonderland, as well as some Studio Ghibli kind of Miyazaki vibes. And a bit of a Tim Burton feel too. You know, it's all about death. There is some kind of gothic melancholia to the whole thing. And there is a little bit of an existential edge to some of the conversations that you will have. You are a messenger of death, after all. You are a reaper. And so you're dealing with these kind of existential topics throughout the story. And everyone that you meet is commenting on what's going on in the relationship between life and death. And from a video game's point of view, I thought a little bit about Hollow Knight throughout this game, for various reasons. The setting, for sure, the kind of the slight Metroidvania nature of it all, the kind of the gothic scenario, and the music, the really wonderful music by David Fenn, one of the two people that make up Acid Nerve. The combat reminded me a little bit of Hyper Light Drifter at times. There are these kind of combat arenas, which sometimes form slight difficulty spikes, I'll say. It's nothing crazy, but there definitely are spikes where you're kind of just wandering around, facing occasional enemies, and then suddenly doors appear, and you have to face off against waves of baddies. You're sealed into a room, and you might have to see off 5 or 6 or 7 waves of enemies in succession without an opportunity to heal. So there's a little bit of Hyperlight Drifter in there, although I will say that the combat is nowhere near as tight as in Hyperlight Drifter, where it really does feel like you can turn on a pinhead, and there are lots of different strategies and weapons at your disposal. It's pretty simplistic in Death's Door. You know, it's just a dash and strike gameplay. And there's, yeah, a lot of Zelda in here too, in the way that the dungeons are structured, the puzzles, the kind of switches and levers, all of these different kind of puzzles with lasers to avoid and falling platforms. And it's kind of standard Zelda fare, but in a really good way. I think a lot of Zelda fans have been lamenting the lack of that kind of classic Zelda gameplay in the more recent Zelda games. I think this game will really scratch that itch for them. And I mean, that's some pretty big names that I've just talked about, you know, Alice in Wonderland, Spirited Away, Hyperlight Drifter and Zelda, things like that. And the game doesn't feel like it's an imitation of any of them, but it feels like it takes from all of them as it needs to, and it puts it all together into a really a beautiful construction. This is a really good game. It's a really lovingly crafted game, and I've had a really good time with it, I have to say. So as always, I'll run through a few of the good points and the less good points of the game. I noticed when I was writing these out in my notes that there is 3 times as many good points as bad points here, which is not always the case, actually. So it just shows you my general feelings about this one. But the first thing I'm going to shout out is the music. It's really fantastic. It's really atmospheric. It feels big budget. All of the instruments feel beautifully recorded and organic. It's almost like an orchestral score for an animated movie. And it has cycles to it, so each track can be like a kind of a sad, slow refrain with just one instrument. And then as you move into a different area, that refrain will develop and grow into kind of a more jaunty kind of theme. And then there is a kind of a pumped-up symphonic piece as well that really gets your heart racing, and that will come when you're in combat, when you're in one of those combat gauntlets, or when you face against a boss. And the music adds so much to this game, it really does. Every time you go back to the bureaucracy, you hear the piano theme, and you become really used to hearing it. It's really nice, these plucked strings and piano. It makes you feel like you're coming back home in a way. And all of the different areas have a theme that really fits them. So the music really elevates this game, it really, really does. A little bit like Hollow Knight, again. That fantastic soundtrack that gives it so much richness and depth and really fleshes out the kind of the emotional spectrum that the game occupies. I also really enjoyed the sense of progression that you get in this game. Each dungeon and each area has a kind of a mirrored format to it. So there's always like a kind of an entry area where you're trying to get into the dungeon. And then when you get in, you have to find 4 souls of other crows, other reapers, and when you find those 4, a door will open. Then you have to have a combat gauntlet where you'll get a new ability at the end of it, and then you have to go into a final dungeon, solve some puzzles, and then have your boss fight. And each time it's the same setup, but it works really well because each area looks really different and feels really different, and there are always new puzzle elements. Each dungeon seems to have a kind of a puzzle theme to it. And the whole thing just feels very crisply designed. They've done a really good job of that. You always feel like you're getting somewhere, and you usually know what you're supposed to be doing most of the time. And all of that is aided by the art style. It's really crisp, it's really clean. The visual style is that you're looking down, it's an isometric point of view, but everything is done in polygons, it's not pixel art. And so it's kind of 2.5D, like you're kind of... as you're walking along, for example, if you see a church spire swinging into the shot, Everything's kind of moving past you in a cool 3D way. And occasionally the viewpoint will shift, sometimes to reveal a secret around a corner. And sometimes when you find a cutscene or when you find a shrine, the camera will zoom in and you realize that you're looking at like a game that could have been like a full 3D game, like Thea or something like that, or like Ocarina of Time or something. It kind of has that fully 3D rendered thing going on. But they've just decided to do it in an isometric perspective, and it works really well. And I really like the way that the art is handled as well, like the sense of place that you get. For example, the Urn Witch's Manor. There is this kind of witch that you have to go and find at the start of the game. She's your first giant soul. And her house is beautiful. There's like an armchair in front of a roaring fire. And it's casting a shadow across the room. It's just a really arresting scene, and you really feel her presence there. And you see the same in her bedroom, the same in her bathroom, in her library. You really get a sense of it being this witch's house. And that's mirrored across all of the different areas. It's really well done. And I got a really strong sense of place from all of the locations in this game. There is a point at which you'll find an old pub called the Stranded Sailor, and there are paper lanterns strung up all around it, and there's some good music playing, and there's a couple of people knocking around, and the Flooded Fortress when you're trying to find a Frog King in his swamp. There's a network of plank bridges, and all of the planks are painted in different bright colours, and the water is bright blue. And the music and the visuals all kind of meld together to give you a really strong sense of place, these kind of slightly sad, forgotten places, but with traces of humanity too, like in the forest village. Everyone lives in these kind of beautiful wooden wagons in the middle of the forest, and everywhere you go you get this sense of kind of melancholy, but also of humane warmth. They've done a really good job with the atmosphere. The writing is great too. There's not a lot of it, but it's all great. It feels like every time you talk to someone, it'll raise a smile or give you something to think about or give you a little bit of extra context for the world. It's just uniformly entertaining. The writing is fantastically good. From the prisoner that you find in the Flooded Fortress and you let him out and he becomes your friend, to the hilarious bureaucrats that work in the office and have one of them is really obsessed with filling out forms and is really excited about your predicament because there's going to be so much paperwork. Another one is really just jaded and sick of the job. But all of the writing is great, the art style is great, the music is great, and the gameplay is good too. And all of these nice touches in all of these different departments, they really add up. Like, you can see the attention to detail, you can see the care with which everything has been handled. It feels like the playtesting has been thorough. It feels like any rough edges that might have been in the game have been spotted and sanded off or preempted. And so the whole thing just feels like it has a high sheen to it. It's a super nicely made game. It's a really a good quality game. And all of it together just elevates it, really. It's a game that feels like it's more than the sum of its parts. And that's kind of unusual, I have to say. You'll see if you play it. It's good vibes. It's not perfect, though. There are a few bad things to it, too. I would say that the combat, whilst it's modelled on Hyperlight Drifter's kind of super tight wave gauntlet arenas, but it's a little basic. Like, all of the weapons feel the same. Most of the time I didn't use ranged weapons, and so it's basic dodge-strike gameplay. You dash away, you dash in, you make a couple of hits, dash away again, and that's basically the whole story of the game. The bosses have a few peculiarities that you have to figure out, but the combat is the same throughout. Sometimes I felt like I didn't quite have the tools that I wanted. I felt like I could have used a couple more tools. I could have used some more abilities to kind of spice it up a little bit and to make me feel a little more agile and in control, maybe. But it is fun. It is fun enough. It's not bad. It's maybe just could have been more evolved. But there are a couple of more sticky sticking points. For example, the lack of a map. Honestly, like, this is the big one. I don't know what they were thinking here, really. I think that Metroidvanias without maps are flawed by design, because in Metroidvanias you have to backtrack, you have to know where you're going, You have to remember specific spots, usually like maybe, you know, 8 or 10 different spots where you need to explode a wall or use a hookshot. And there is no map at all in this game. It's a huge oversight. It means that you literally just have to do rounds of entire areas every time you get a power-up, if that's the way you want to play. Like when you get a hookshot, you're going to have to go around all of the previous areas because there is no map. You can't zero in and fast travel straight to places that you know you need to explore. There are also times where you could get lost. I got lost once or twice, and just kind of, especially in dungeons, I couldn't find the way forward, or I kind of, something didn't catch my eye. There was one point in the kind of the furnace dungeon where I had kind of done 4 different rounds with different combat gauntlets and come out back at the beginning, and I just went round again. I didn't know where to go, and I had just not noticed a door in one corner of the screen. So there were a couple of times when a map would have really been useful. I think in the late game, I'll feel the same when I'm going around sweeping up those final secrets. And in the post game, maybe, I'm really going to wish that I could zero in on places that I wanted to get to. Like in Hollow Knight, you can put a pin in the map. You can have, you know, different coloured pins, and you can map out your own kind of version of this world so that you know that the red map points are where you needed your hookshot, or the blue map points are where you needed your double jump, things like that. So that would have really, really helped out. I would say the restart points aren't perfect either. You have to respawn through the door that you entered the area through, or the last door that you used. And that can mean that you spawn really far from where you died, and you have to schlep through the map again. Restart points closer to where you died would have really, really helped. It's never like grueling or too long, but it's just inconvenient. It's like 4 or 5 screens worth of walking just to get back to where you were. So I wish that they had just maybe just had a temporary door that drops you close to where you died. It may have taken some more time to design that, because obviously you can't be dropped into a hazardous area or an area packed with enemies. So you are spawned in safe areas, which does make sense, but maybe there could have been a way to do this better. But that's all for the bad points. Lack of a map, restart points, difficulty spikes. That's kind of it, really. Other than that, I think this is a pretty great game. If I was reviewing it myself, I would probably knock off a point for the map and the restart point thing. I'd maybe give it either an 8 or a 9 out of 10, I think. It's a really good game. I'm pretty sure it's going to be on my own Games of the Year list come year end. Really, really good one. I hope it comes to the other consoles, because it feels a little locked in on the Xbox. But this is a really evocative game. As I say, it reminded me of Miyazaki, it reminded me of Hollow Knight, it reminded me of Tim Burton, Alice in Wonderland. It's rich, it's gothic, it's kind of exciting, it has a wholesome feel to it. It's really well designed, especially the audiovisual side of it. It's a triumph, really. That's Death's Door. So I hope you liked hearing about Death's Door. I certainly enjoyed playing it. I'm looking forward to finishing it at the weekend, getting some time to just really sit with the game and spend some time with it. I've played it in several hour sessions and just really gotten lost in this one. I really, really like that one. I hope you get a chance to play it on whatever system you have. And I think I'll wind up today with a couple of thank yous. First of all, I would like to thank user Super M, one of my patrons over on Patreon. And they left me a really generous message on the Discord after last week's episode saying that they enjoyed the interview with Diala Katzen Wright, and saying that the echo on my voice didn't put them off too much. So I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the support, so thanks to Super M. I would also give another shout out to Hopple, who sent me his old Xbox One S when he was finished with it, when he upgraded. It's the reason that I was able to play Death's Door for the show. So thank you to Hopple. If you would like to join them over on Patreon, it's patreon.com/gamingintheWild. Thanks very much for listening. Take care of yourselves and each other. See you next week.
Indulge in holiday cravings with the nutrition you need from Kachava's All-in-One Whole Body Shake. It's 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Try their newest flavors, like the limited edition Chocolate Mint. With Cachava, you're getting the highest quality ingredients. No fillers, no nonsense. Holiday nutrition has never been this easy or delicious. Go to Cachava, K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com, and use code FITNESS for 15% off.
With fall in full swing, more moments call for more comfort. Mack Weldon's got you covered with comfortable, easy-to-layer clothes designed for cooler days and timeless style. Their new Ace line, inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, combines everyday comfort with long-lasting, confident looks you can count on. For over a decade, Mack Weldon has designed timeless, innovative menswear to help you move through the day with confidence. With the new Ace line, looking effortlessly sophisticated this fall is easy and comfortable. Stock up on crazy cozy sweatpants, shorts, and sweatshirts that elevate your style. They even have blazers, if you're lucky enough to grab one while they're in stock. Mack Weldon balances classic pieces with updated details to keep you looking sharp, not flashy. Just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. Fall into comfort with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MAC25. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code MAC25.